Abby.
And I'm Allie.
And it's About Time for True Crime.
Hey guys.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm very lovely. Can you believe that it's the week of Christmas?
It is the week of Christmas. And for the first time in a month, I'm listening. And that's the greatest gift you could give me.
Well, really, because I love just listening to your voice. I feel like this is like getting coal. It's like you have to listen to me now.
Ugh. That's grow up. No.
That's how it feels.
Uh-uh.
Yeah.
Uh-uh.
Well, anyway, I have...
Sorry, I don't want to fight with you on Maine, but we will be talking about that later.
We'll be DMing later.
Yes.
I have the most lovely view because I have my bestie in front of me as well as my Christmas tree in the background.
Mm-hmm.
With a little candle going and cute little Christmas decorations.
Yeah, and kitties running around.
And a little, like, little blanket on my lap and cats eating and probably going to step on my keyboard at some point.
But I love that. They're so cute.
It's the little things.
It is. It's a nice cozy night. It is cold as hell and I have been to another state and back already today for work. So I'm excited for a fun little decompression zone into true crime time hangout vibe.
Hell yeah.
All of that. And see all of you guys because, well, Merry Christmas. I know at this point, I think Hanukkah just ended.
I believe so.
Yeah. So happy Hanukkah for those who celebrated. We love that.
And Merry Christmas to those who celebrate Christmas and Merry whatever you celebrate.
Happy everything, if you will. Merry season.
Just have fun.
Yeah.
Whatever it is, spend time with the people you love.
Get warm and cozy. And
listen to your favorite true crime podcasts.
Aw, guys.
And if you want to give us the best Christmas present you could.
The bestest.
The bestest. We would, our days would be made. Our year would be made. If you, what a year, by the way. Can we just a fucking year? Anyway, that's an aside. But if you want to make it just that much better, we would love if you guys would rate the podcast 5 stars. If you like what you've heard this year, we work really hard.
Yeah.
So we'd love to kind of have that as like proof that you guys appreciate that. So we love you. If you could tell a friend, share us on your main.
Yeah.
You know, I think we're fun to hang out with.
I think we're really fun to hang out with, and I'm biased, but I'm also completely objectively saying that correctly. So I think
I'm completely biased, but I'm also hypercritical of myself.
Yes.
So if anybody would really find anything wrong with anything we've done in the past, it would be me. And trust me, there's plenty. We do not pretend to be perfect or always get it right.
But right now, but we're fun.
But we are trying to learn and grow, and that's all we, you know, we just have these conversations. If you haven't figured it out, it's not really scripted.
Nope.
So if you were looking for that, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
We really can't offer that. This is relaxed, cozy vibes, come as you are.
A lot of research, and we want to make sure we get that to you guys right, but you're never going to get a big production from us. It's never going to be giant sound effects in the background. At max, we've done sometimes like people speaking that are in these cases.
Yeah, sometimes if there's an audio recording, we'll include it, but even rarely we do that.
Right.
But we also just, I don't know.
We like hanging out with you.
We like to share what we think about these cases. And then, like, I was thinking, I'm like, if I went back and listened to like our first 10, first of all, I won't be doing that, especially not this time of year. Are you kidding me?
No.
I need to be holly and jolly. But if I were, I wonder if I would agree with her.
Yeah.
Like, I would hear Allie from a few years ago and be like,
homegirl.
Do I stand by that?
And yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, and I like that you guys get to hear that with us. You get to see as we grow and as we change. And I think we get to see that with you guys, too. Some of you have been real active in, like, interacting with us almost since the very beginning, if not from the very beginning. Mm-hmm. And that's been really cool, too, because as we all go through this, we all grow through it together.
Yeah. And we hope that this time of year is just, I know this time of year can be really hard for people. I know that there's all this emphasis on being happy and cheerful and joyful, and not everybody is feeling that, and we are sensitive and empathetic to that, and it is not always like that at this table, and we get that. So we hope that you guys are taking care of each other, taking care of yourselves. Do something fun that you can enjoy. If that's hanging out with us, hey, listen, the table is always here for you.
Pull up a seat. Yeah.
no matter what. But also, you know, like, go outside. If you live somewhere where you can touch grass right now, do that. We can't.
Yeah.
And we wish we could. But instead, it's covered in snow because we're in New England.
Can someone honorarily touch grass for me and just show me a picture? Because I'm dying for it.
Can we just get a video of you, like, touching sand at a beach?
Oh, a beach. A beach that's not covered in ice.
Like a beach ASMR.
Yeah.
Could you? Would
Please
you?
DM? Email? You don't have to let other people see.
Would you?
Send that over email. Anyway, now I'm daydreaming. So
yes.
I am excited to hop in soon because I know very little about this case. I also am just excited to be in the listener seat for a little bit. But also, I was curious, now that we are like 1 week away from the new year, what do you guys do for New Year's? Do you celebrate? Do you go out somewhere? Are you awake till midnight? At my house, we pretty much have to get over the 9 p.m. hump. And once we're over that, we can make it. But mm-hmm. it's sometimes a real toss up.
You have to catch your second or third wind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then you have to be excited and party. But at least I'll be with Mr. and Mrs. Apple Dabbleson for New Year's.
And I love them.
Yeah.
Mrs. Apple Dabbleson is a hero of mine.
Yes. And she loves you very much.
And Mr. Apple Dabbleson, I want to boop his nose.
He also loves you so much.
I know, and I love them.
Yeah, I know.
So I will be going out with a group of friends.
Mm.
We have a tradition where we go get some dinner. And then we pick somebody's house that we go back to and we just like watch it on TV and hang out and play games and do fun things. So that's what we will be doing.
I love that.
And I used to be I don't give a shit. I'm going to be in bed by like 9:30, 10 and I'll wake up and hey, look, I still have work. like life doesn't really change that much, but I'm trying to get into really just like making a point to carve out the time to have those special moments and get together and gather and tell people how you feel and love them and do all the things. So I don't know. I'm in my like gushy era. I don't know. I would say maybe the last year or so, I've just been hyper like sensitive and sentimental.
Yeah.
Which I don't know. I don't know why, but that's where you'll find me.
I love that.
That's what I've been doing. I'm softening a little bit.
I know.
Look at me.
I know.
I don't know how I feel.
I'm so proud of you.
Well, we'll see.
You're so cutesy.
Well, we'll see where it goes. I don't know. We want to know what are your goals for 2026? And like, what are some realistic goals? Because we always say, oh, my New Year's resolution, I'm going to go to the gym. And then the gym is packed for like until the second week of January and then it's not. So realistically, what are you implementing into your routine to make a positive change? And how did you decide that? We want to know.
So a little, I don't know, heads up, peek behind the curtain, if you will. I can tell you one of my goals. And I think you guys would, I think you'll see the vision. Tell me if you don't, but I do think you would. I'm planning on actively going to urgent care less next year.
Yeah. Oh, Abby. Mm-hmm.
That's a resolution. That is a literal resolution of mine for 2026.
In the time that I've known Abby, I have seen her break bones.
Yep.
I've seen her have allergic reactions where her eyes swell shut.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen her get an ulcer.
Yep.
I've seen her break her finger.
Uh-huh.
I've seen her need an endoscopy.
Yep.
What else?
A lot of that was this year. But also, you have seen me during one of my great roller skating falls and the giant knee scab that made me look like I was 9 for a little bit.
That's true. I do remember that.
When I was in my master's program.
I've seen you fall down countless stairs. I don't know that that's even mentionable at this point.
You've also seen me fall up countless stairs.
That too. I've seen you save coffee, but also like throw it up a wall, which is interesting.
Okay. Hey,
I've never seen someone do that.
It's been like 5 years. That was one time. That's a good batting record.
True, but like it stayed there forever and I mean, nobody found it for like a while, and we were like, what is that? Oh no, what did Abby do? So there's that. What else have you done? There's more, isn't there?
Oh, there's certainly more. There's always more with me.
I've seen your cat send you to urgent care a few times because you've gotten cat scratch fever, which who knew that was a thing?
I do think that would be a really good never have I ever, just for me specifically.
Had cat scratch fever.
Yeah. I don't know anybody else who's had it. Oh, except for maybe one of my aunts. But yeah, like that's it.
We should have like the Dunder Mifflin rabies run-a-thon.
Yeah, you should. For me.
For you, but it'll be like for the cat scratch fever.
Yeah, can we get a GoFundMe for my medical bills, guys?
For the tens of people who have suffered from this.
And you know what? That's a lot.
Yeah, if you even care.
We're almost at 5 whole people who could have suffered from cat scratch fever that I don't know about.
Okay? Who only needed antibiotics and then they're completely fine.
I know. And you know what? The kicker of that, if I have to be so honest, it was not the cat scratch fever. It was not that my cat attacked me. Both of those we knew were going to happen. Or at least I did. They were on my bingo card. However, I was literally in Maine for a boat day, and that day they were like, hey, yeah, you can't get that wet. And I was like,
That's true. How did we forget your eardrum exploding?
Because
that happened too.
Not all of this, but so much of this has been in 2025 specifically.
I think going to urgent care less is a really, really good goal.
Yeah. Yeah. And so my hope is that 2026 is filled with less visits. And I was told, if you're wondering, that doesn't mean I can just not go to urgent care if I get hurt. The goal is to get hurt less, which I would love. But ultimately, I just love to spend less time in an urgent care waiting room. That's really where my heart is. But I know the way to do that is to not have to go to one and to ignore having to go and not go.
Yeah.
Even though I have tried. I did try that with my finger. I was like, that's fine. It's facing the wrong way, but it's fine.
We're going that way.
Yes. And I was like, and you know what? It's probably just bruised. I'm just being a baby.
Nah, shit looked rough.
It was.
Lovingly.
So yeah, what are yours? We're so excited to hear.
Yeah, tell us. I'm going to take some time to think and reflect on that, and I'll report back. But
well, that works because next week is going to be right before New Year's Eve.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And as a blanket rule, as always, but especially this time of year, please be safe.
Yep.
Drive sober or get pulled over. Click it or ticket. Wear your seatbelt.
Yeah, someone loves you.
Head on a swivel. We love you. You're not going. Are you kidding me? Do you think we're going to let anything happen to you?
You thought you could come into this family and you could sit at this table every damn week and you wouldn't have two people who care about you and your safety?
Bitch.
Idiot. Not idiot. We love you. But idiot.
Yeah. Little.
To take that.
Chest poke right there. Yeah you think you yeah, you feel that?
Yeah, so sit down, buckle up, be safe or else.
Take care of yourself and your friends and keep an eye on each other.
Or
bitch.
Or we're coming for you.
Yeah, or we're gonna just talk to you about why maybe you didn't want to do that and maybe come up with a game plan for moving forward.
Yeah. And like, you know, we're not mad. We're just disappointed. And we really care about you.
Which is the worst thing we could say to you. We won't say that. You can't tell a type A person. I'm not mad. I'm just disappointed.
I'm like, so instead of just being mad at me, you actually hate me and everything I stand for. Cool.
You think it would be better without me here?
Yes, I understand.
Oh, I get it.
We want you here. That's the point.
Bitch. All right, let's get into it. I think you have something to say.
Oh, yoo-hoo, pod's on.
Hi, hello, and welcome or welcome back to your favorite true crime podcast. About time for true crime.
That's us.
We feel, as always, just so endlessly lucky to have so many of you at the table today, every day, tomorrow, yesterday.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry that on the heels of covering Chris and Shanann Watts, that I bring you another family annihilation case. That is something that I did give Abby the heads up about after we sobbed and tried to find some levity in any kind of way that we could for 4 weeks now. If you thought we were escaping that, I'm sorry to tell you that we are not.
Don't worry, I'm holding her beer.
Yeah, you know. We said we won't do this to you. And then I was like, wait a minute. But I have wanted to cover this case for a while now, and it didn't feel appropriate to cover it any other time of the year. Like, I don't think that it hits in July the way that it hits now, and it just didn't feel appropriate to cover it then. So for reasons you'll understand very soon as we get into this, I've just felt really led to bring this case to you, and I'm sorry that the timing of it couldn't be a little bit better, but I also just really feel like this case needs to be told, even though the details we have are limited. A real family went through this.
Yeah.
We're not going to be getting into too many graphic details today, but I will warn you that in this case, like all of the cases we cover, that it might be troubling to some listeners. And with you lovely listeners getting this episode the week of Christmas, it seemed only fitting to bring you the Christmas Day Lawson family murders.
Ugh.
All of our sources are listed in the show notes below, and for trigger warnings, this episode contains violence against children, child murder, and mentions of possible incest.
Mm-hmm.
Please listen with care. In 1929, so we're going way back.
Okay.
Like 100 years ago, in 1929, the winter hit North Carolina especially hard. Stokes County was pummeled with bitter cold and snowfall, and I'm sure that if you ask anybody who lives in North Carolina today, that they would be not pleased to be getting some snow.
Yeah, certainly not that kind of snow.
Absolutely not. And in Stokes County lived the Lawson family, who was Charles, who also was called Charlie, so we'll kind of call him that interchangeably.
Okay.
So Charles and his wife Fanny and their 7 children.
Okay.
In 1911, Charles married Fanny, and the couple had actually had 8 children, but their young son William died at 6 years old in 1920.
Oh.
Fast forward to the winter of 1929, and 43-year-old Charles and 37-year-old Fanny had their 7 children at home in a modest cabin.
Okay.
Their oldest son was Arthur, who was, depending on the source, and they are kind of split in the middle here. Some call him 19, some call him 16.
Yeah.
It really doesn't matter a whole lot, but he is their eldest son. There's also Marie, who is 17, Carrie, who is 12, Maybelle, who is 7, James, who is 4, Raymond, who is 2, and the youngest, Mary Lou, who is only 4 months old.
Oh.
The family had recently purchased a tobacco farm just 2 years earlier. This family was not born into money. Charles had worked and saved to own his own farm one day, so it was a modest farm. The family lived in a very small, modest cabin. And in 1927, he was actually able to purchase this. So by now, he's owned this for 2 years.
Okay.
By all reports, the farm was profitable.
Nice.
Just a couple days before Christmas in 1929, Charlie took his family of 9 into town to purchase new clothing and to have a family portrait taken.
Aww.
A century ago, taking a family photo wasn't as easy as it is today.
Oh, yeah.
Sitting for a family photo wasn't common or seen as necessary in a lot of rural areas, especially the one that the Lawsons were from.
Yeah.
And really, unless your family was prominent or of authority or wealthy, often families went without that.
Right, and especially too, like if you think about the development of cameras, at that time they were probably still taking a lot of these film and putting them on like a silver backing, like something that is made of silver. So it's pretty expensive. It was not easily accessible or easily purchased and possessed.
I mean, we all have cameras in our pockets all day, every day. It's so much easier now than it ever was to be able to get those, but a lot of families never considered it or prioritized it or really had anything. In fact, sometimes people only had photographs after somebody was dead.
Yeah.
But this family, the Lawsons, didn't really fit those categories. They weren't of money. They didn't have authority. They weren't this big, prominent family that everybody knew. So it did seem a little bit odd that Charlie took his family there.
Yeah.
However, reports say that their farm had been successful the last 2 years.
Right.
So maybe they were headed in that wealthy direction and maybe he wanted to photograph the family.
I also wonder, too, if a part of it could be, you know, it's like the Christmas spirit, Christmas time, so you have an excuse to do it. But also maybe in a follow-up to losing their son as like a, we have everybody here, Mm-hmm. We want to cherish that.
Absolutely. This family portrait was possibly the first of its kind in the Lawson family, but it was absolutely the last. Christmas morning was typical, but by the afternoon, the day had been pretty much settled. Okay. Dessert was on the table. Their oldest son, Arthur, had headed into town to purchase some ammunition to go rabbit hunting, a common Christmas Day tradition. So he was kind of off on his own that afternoon. 12-year-old Carrie and 7-year-old Maybelle were headed to visit their aunt and uncle. Marie, I believe, had baked the cake and she had like left it on the table to cool. So things are kind of winding down.
Right.
And as Carrie and Maybelle are headed off to go visit family, unbeknown to them, their father, Charlie, was poised to take shots at them.
Oh, gosh.
As they came into view of the tobacco barn and headed toward their relative's house, their own father fired a 12-gauge shotgun at them both.
Oh.
After they fell, he approached their bodies and proceeded to bludgeon them to ensure they were dead.
Oh my gosh.
Charlie made his way back toward the cabin where Fanny was standing on the porch. It's unclear if she heard the shots and went out to the porch to try to figure out what might have happened. But as he saw her, he took aim and fired at her.
Oh my word.
The sound of this gunshot that killed their mother sent the remaining children inside into chaos.
Yeah.
Their oldest daughter, 17-year-old Marie, tried ushering her younger brothers into hiding places.
Oh.
When their dad made it in the cabin, though, he killed Marie. He then moved through the home, killing 4-year-old James, 2-year-old Raymond.
Oh.
Sources differ on the way they were killed. Some say that they were shot before being bludgeoned. Others say that they were only bludgeoned. And the final victim of their father was the infant.
Oh my god.
4-month-old Mary Lou. We're done talking about the violence against children for a little bit now, though.
Okay.
I told you it wouldn't be super gory and into detail. If the details were available, I would give you a heads up, but I probably wouldn't spare you them.
Yeah.
Because these people really went through this. Their story deserves to be told, but we're talking about something that took place a century ago.
Right.
And reliable sources on that that haven't been embellished for some kind of dramatic retelling.
Right.
Were difficult to find, so I'm not going to make anything up, but that's what this is.
Okay.
Now, remember that his oldest son, Arthur, was in town.
Yeah.
So he's not home. He had no idea that his family was being executed on Christmas Day just up the road by his dad. It's unclear how this trip into town came about, though, and this has been widely debated, or at least pondered, I guess, because we really don't know.
Right.
But the question is, did he decide on his own that he needed to go buy ammunition or buy anything in town and left on his own?
Mm-hmm.
Or did his dad send him there, say, can you go run this errand to bring him away? And something that I question that I didn't see anybody else question, and I don't really know, like growing up, I heard of a distant, you know, past where everything was closed on Sundays.
Yeah.
Right? Where things would be open 6 days a week, but the emphasis was always that Sunday was a day for family.
Right.
Whether that was church or anything like that, but like you took care of the home, you had a meal together, your kids stayed home.
Yeah.
There was sort of that emphasis on like staying in. And so I don't know if that went as far back as the 20s or if that was even an option with the Depression approaching.
Right.
But it struck me as a little bit odd, I'll say, that some store would have been open on Christmas Day, but I don't know if that would have been a choice, if they cared as much then as we do now. I mean, places are open Christmas and, you know.
Yeah. Now it's kind of everywhere, but I do wonder also if okay. Let me walk you through my brain before I just skip all over. It is interesting to me that he goes out into town on Christmas Day, especially a century ago. Like, there's a lot going on around this time in 1929. And part of me wonders, are people starting to stay open because of the Depression? They want to make money. Or could it be that at least this Christmas, there's one place or a few places open to sell the stuff that are the traditions. Because if a rabbit hunt is a tradition, they would stand to probably make quite a bit of money from that. So maybe that on its own would be enough.
Right.
But that being said, even if it's, you know, a trip into town, I don't know how far away that is, but it sounds like it's far enough that he's going to be gone for a while. It does make me wonder then why he would go into town and have a whole trip for just one thing, which would be the ammunition, which in hindsight, we now know that they weren't lacking.
I was just going to say, I don't know if you'd use a 12 gauge for rabbit hunting, but there certainly were some rounds at home.
Right.
So it is kind of weird. We don't know.
Right.
We can only speculate. The other theory, though, is that because their son Arthur was the oldest, and there's that one infamous photo of the family, he is the biggest in the family. He's a he's a tall young man. Whether he's 16 or 19, I don't know how much of a difference that would really play in this. He would have easily been able to overpower his dad to stop him. And so the theory is, if Charlie sent him into town, it was so that he could do what he wanted to do without really anybody fighting back, because the next oldest son was not going to be doing anything about that.
Got it.
So we don't really know. Also, I think maybe just as it is now, I don't know that if it would have been then, but sort of the emphasis is like Christmas morning.
Yeah.
And so that maybe by the afternoon, Maybelle and Carrie were going to be heading off to family. Things might be calming down. I don't know if this family had like money to have this big meal. I mean, family was kind of supposed to be coming and going throughout the day, but I think maybe by then it was like, you can maybe do what you want.
Yeah.
We don't know. I don't know enough about this time. I don't know enough about this place, and we don't know enough about this family to really try to figure that out, but it is a really big deal.
Yeah.
That Arthur wasn't there.
Yeah, he's the only one.
So if he was the one that opted to run this errand, he unknowingly saved his own life. Or Charlie sent him to run that errand to either spare him.
Right.
Like, for some reason, he didn't want him to die. Or maybe he planned to kill him when he got back, but he didn't want him preventing him doing anything else.
Right.
Like many other aspects of this case, we just don't have the answers. So, here we are. Arthur's in town. The family has been killed. Other family members had started to make the rounds, as is typical on most holidays, right?
Right.
And they arrived to their home to find it eerily quiet.
Right.
Think of how many little kids are there. Like, you wouldn't hear them from outside.
So many kids there.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you wouldn't hear them as you're walking up the stairs. And they didn't. They didn't hear anything. In fact, it was incredibly quiet.
Well, and even if there was just one or two there and everybody else was out doing things, it's Christmas. They're playing. There's stuff going on.
There's snow to play outside in. I don't know if they had the clothing for it, but like,
yeah,
kids should be out playing.
They're frolicking.
They should be.
Yeah.
Get all tuckered out so they sleep well.
Finally, yeah.
But when they entered the house, they just found almost the entire family annihilated.
Right.
I mean, family arrived maybe with like a dessert and probably dropped it where they stood. I mean,
yeah,
that is a scene that nobody in their wildest dreams imagines, their wildest nightmares, imagine that you're going to walk in and find your family in.
Right.
And they don't know what happened. They don't know who did it.
No.
Oh, and Arthur's missing, which is weird.
Right.
After they were killed, because this is how the family found them, Charlie had apparently repositioned their bodies.
Oh.
He made it so that their arms were crossed, like across their chest.
Yeah.
And he put pillows under their heads as if to put them to rest in some way. So he didn't leave them where they fell. I mean, he did in that they were still on the ground, but he tried to almost make it as proper as he could. And the two girls outside, he did the same thing with their arms, but he put rocks beneath their heads as if
those were pillows. Yeah.
So just very odd. So they're finding these bodies, but they're not found where they fell. They're found obviously moved.
Right.
Which was even stranger. Needless to say, panic struck. Word spread throughout the community very quickly.
Yeah.
Including to either 16 or 19-year-old Arthur.
Oh.
While the previous shotgun rounds wouldn't have really been out of place due to the tradition of that rabbit hunting, that final shot blast after the bodies were discovered and everyone was already on high alert did send people into like, this is weird.
There was another?
Yes.
Okay.
So they're looking at the family. People are at the house.
Mm-hmm.
Word has spread. If anybody heard the shots before, they're not thinking anything of it due to this tradition. But there's another shot that rings out in the coming from not that far away.
Got it.
And people are like, well, now that's suspicious. Now we need to look into that.
Oh, yeah.
As family and community members gathered to the property, that final shot actually had come from the woods behind the cabin.
Okay.
A police officer and Arthur himself followed a set of snowy footprints to where they found the body of 43-year-old Charles Lawson next to a tree.
Oh my word.
His footprints led them first to a creek where it's believed he washed off his hands of the blood of his family, then further into the woods to a tree where the footprints went around and around the tree.
Oh.
As if he paced around it several times before deciding on taking his own life.
My word.
And I, not that this is a super important detail, I guess, but I was surprised to hear that when he shot himself in the chest.
Oh.
Which I'm assuming if he had that shotgun, he would have had to pull the trigger like with his shoe, like with his foot.
Right.
To be able to do that. And maybe that was the easiest way that he could position himself. But regardless, they found his body with essentially a hole in his chest.
Yeah.
And around the tree were just so many footprints that it looked like he had just gone around and around and around. So clearly distressed. Like you could almost see in the footprints how distressed he was.
Yeah.
And on his body, they found two scribbled notes. One said, "Trouble can cause."
Okay.
And the other, "Nobody to blame."
Huh.
"Trouble can cause, nobody to blame." What he meant by that, we don't know.
Fascinating. Horrifying and fascinating.
The Lawson cabin sat atop a hill, which at this time, as we said, was covered in snow and very difficult to navigate.
Mm-hmm.
Even if the community were used to navigating snow all of the time, it is still not the age of like the super easy plow that we can grab and drive up. In 1929, they needed to get creative. And this is, it's a tale of community coming together, but it was like they should have never had to come together the way they did.
Yeah.
Each member of the family was wrapped in bed sheets that were kind of donated by family and other people, like neighbors, other people in the community that probably didn't have much to spare, but spared it given the circumstances to just wrap the bodies in before they were brought out.
Okay.
And what they did was they made something like a sled.
Yeah.
And they would bring it up the hill, load the body in the sheets to try to kind of preserve them and hide them a little bit, wrapped them in that, put them on the sled, and then had to like gently get it down the hill and then into a hearse.
Okay.
So like they had to be brought to a funeral home, but sad that everybody had to come together that way on Christmas, but incredible that they did despite the horror. They end up being brought to this funeral home, which was the closest one, but that one was not equipped to autopsy and embalm 8 bodies at once.
Uh-huh.
So they had to be moved to a bigger funeral home, which was further away in Madison, North Carolina, called Yelton Funeral Parlor.
Okay.
Because this is such an old case, there are a few details available online. And short of someone funding my trip to North Carolina, which I would love to take one day, by the way, I really can't pore over the records the way I would like to, so I'm relying on what I could dig up. There's not much about the autopsies here, except that they seem to be very interested in Charles Lawson's brain.
Okay.
For obvious reasons.
Yeah.
It was preserved in formaldehyde to be studied at Johns Hopkins Hospital.
Okay.
Unfortunately, there was no smoking gun with his brain, though.
Yeah.
While it seemed to be on the smaller side, that was really the only thing of note with it. Parts of it seemed to have been underdeveloped, but
okay.
nothing that really seemed to be like, oh, this is the reason for this behavior. There were no abnormalities.
Right.
We are going to come back to this in a bit.
Okay.
But it was largely unimpressive.
Okay.
Which I think they were really hoping to find something that would point to how a man could love his family, purchase a farm, work hard, photograph his family, purchase them all new clothing for this photograph, to have the photograph taken just days before he kills them all.
Yeah.
Or all but one, including himself.
Yeah.
Oh. 2 days after the murders, on December 27th, 1929, nearly 5,000 people gathered in solemn remembrance of the family. Five hearses brought seven caskets to a giant single grave site where the caskets were lined up side by side in the grave. Infant Mary Lou was laid to rest in her mother's arms.
Oh.
Charles Lawson was buried alongside the family he killed.
Mm.
And a single headstone, which read out all of the family members and like sort of their birth dates and death dates, but a quote on it said, "Not now, but in the coming years, it will be a better land. We'll read the meaning of our tears, and then sometime we'll understand."
Interesting.
So let's jump into the theories.
Yeah.
Because while we'll never actually know the true motive, and if one of these is true or none of them are, we can't ask Charlie, we can't ask anybody else, there are a few main theories that tend to hold the most weight to most people.
Okay.
The first one is a more sinister theory. And that theory is that Charlie, the dad, had an incestuous relationship with his oldest daughter, Marie.
Mm.
She was the 17-year-old.
Yeah.
This theory is most often referenced as a point made by Trudy Smith and Bruce Jones, okay, who were a father-daughter duo who conducted independent interviews and research and wrote a book called White Christmas, Blood Christmas.
Okay.
They also wrote other books as well. Just before it was sent to print, Stella Lawson, who was Charlie Lawson's niece, read it and came forward with information that she had kept private for, at that time, 61 years.
Holy moly.
Stella said she remembered overhearing some family lore when she was a kid, which included that Fanny had shared with some family, including Stella's mom, that Fanny had been concerned about an inappropriate, incestuous relationship between Charlie and Marie.
Okay.
Because Stella's mom died in 1928, so this was a year before the murders.
Right.
It would stand to mean that Fanny was suspicious of that relationship for at least a year.
Okay.
The theory is that Marie had become pregnant as a result of this abuse, and this was apparently affirmed by other rumors at the time that Marie was pregnant and that her family, her parents knew,
okay,
by Christmas of 1929 that she was pregnant.
All right.
Unfortunately, the autopsies, there's no mention in Marie's autopsy that she was pregnant.
Okay.
I don't know if that wasn't something that they were checking for, not something they thought was worth noting, or if she just wasn't pregnant. Maybe she thought she was,
right,
and said it. Like, all of those things could be true and she's not pregnant.
Right.
She could have believed she was. They could have believed that there was this inappropriate relationship between the two. We just don't know.
Well, and she's 17, right?
Yes.
So, I don't want to say this flippantly. I don't think it is. But there's also a chance that was true and she had miscarried before. Because even if we think about Shanann and literally last week's episode, she miscarried after being killed. So I would think that if she was, there would be some kind of evidence somewhere to mark down.
Because the body had been found so soon after, I can't imagine that it, if it were true and they knew it, I think we'd know it.
Right.
But we just don't know.
Yeah.
There's so much about this that we don't know.
Right. And that also, regardless of how that went, does not confirm or deny any of those rumors.
Exactly.
Right.
Another theory reported that Charlie had experienced a head injury months prior to the murders.
Okay.
And since that time, he'd been battling insomnia and severe headaches. there's so little information in general on this case. Like I said before, I really can't say that enough.
Right.
And while I can't get you every little detail, I'm not going to make them up. There's just only ever a few lines about this theory.
Yeah.
Most seems to be from that book written where the theory is mostly that there was that relationship between Charles and Marie.
Got it.
There's only ever like a couple of lines about this possible head injury. And even then, they don't say how severe it was.
Right.
Or would they have known how severe it was at that time?
Yeah.
And like I said, we would reference his autopsy again in terms of their kind of fixation on his brain searching for some reason. His autopsy noted no abnormalities. So the thought that it could have been due to a head injury a lot of people rule out, but in my opinion, this is just me as not a medical professional, I'm not putting a lot of stock in that because this is 100 years old. They don't know what they're looking for. I mean, only recently have we really figured out traumatic brain injuries.
Uh-huh.
And not that we have everything figured out. We still don't know everything about the brain.
No, not even close. But
a single injury probably wouldn't show to them what could have caused that behavior.
Well, and certainly not after death, I would think. Like, we've learned more about the brain in the last 100 years than we have in the last 2000, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think it's always important to remember that the kind of tests we do now, they have to deal with the electricity in your brain, the different like neuron stimulation, the different areas that are lighting up over others. So even if his brain was shaped normal, even if there was nothing that they were like, oh, that's a weird giant piece of his brain that doesn't seem to be on other people's.
Mm-hmm.
Barring that, there's not really much you can tell from a past person's brain other than maybe like average sizes of different parts of your brain. And even then, you might not even know what parts mean what.
And I would assume that they were looking for some kind of mass.
Right.
Some kind of tumor, maybe, that would say, oh, it was pressing on this part of the brain, so this must have been it.
Right, or scar tissue or something.
And to our knowledge, we don't have that. But assuming he might have received a traumatic brain injury, it could have resulted in a lot of things. Some significant personality changes, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
I'm no doctor, but persistent painful headaches long after an injury to the head sounds like a red flag to me.
Yeah.
Some behavior changes after a TBI, traumatic brain injury, could include increase in impulsivity, irritability and aggression, disinhibition, so feeling uninhibited in behavior that might otherwise be considered socially unacceptable.
Right.
Egocentricity, as in acting without much regard for others and focusing mainly on themselves. I would say that his behavior in terms of impulsivity, aggression and disinhibition seem really like
prominent.
it seems like those kind of fit the bill to me.
Yeah.
So I kind of lean more into this, but I don't know if that's just because I'm more comfortable with that versus the other theory because it just seems so horrible.
I also wonder if it's a mixture of the two.
But I mean, it's like if Marie were pregnant and that were the case, and we're in this headspace where apparently he believed that somebody had to die.
Right.
Why the whole family? Like, why a 4-month-old? I get, you know what I mean? Like, to me, this just says some kind of snap. And it's reminiscent and also not at all of Chris Watts, where it's like, how does a dad do this? And in one day.
Yep.
But this, how does a dad do that? And in one day. And on Christmas.
Yeah, on Christmas afternoon, after the morning. Which,
after photographing your family, so was that intentional?
Right. Was that like a last hurrah?
Like, did you want a final photo of the family before you killed everybody? Did you know then that you wouldn't kill Arthur? Did he just happen to leave and you wish that you could have? Were you waiting for him to come back, but then you killed yourself instead?
Right.
There's just too many questions here. In regards to the brain injury or what I'm calling a possible brain injury, just because they're like, well, he hit his head. I don't know. Could have been a bump.
Right.
Could have been an actual traumatic brain injury and that they didn't know that, like, oh, maybe he was like throwing up and couldn't sleep and had a really bad headache and then he started acting different.
Yeah.
We don't know.
There's a lot of range for head injury.
And really, any of the people who would have noticed those things, he killed.
Yeah.
So we can't really ask anybody. It's not like he worked an office job where people are like, yeah, Charlie started acting really weird after, you know, such and such time when he was out for a week and came right. back. And he works on a farm with his family. So it's really not, there's not going to be a lot of outside sources to me that are going to pick up on behavior differences other than the people in his family.
Right. His family and maybe very close neighbors. But at the point that you have a farm, what is close neighbors? Mm-hmm. Like, you're still probably talking at least a couple acres for all of your crops, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I do put some stock in that. Also, clearly, whatever it was, it wasn't like a Phineas Gage. He didn't have like metal sticking out of the front of his brain. But that doesn't mean it wasn't just as traumatic and or impactful on him. So I'm curious more about that. I'm curious about a lot of things because, like you said, we just can't know.
And due to, I think it was two reports that I saw that said he shot himself in the chest, leads me to believe that his head was intact for them to be able to try to look, which is why I think they fixated on it so much, because they're like, aha, we have it. We should right. be able to figure this out. And it went to one of the most prestigious places it could have gone to be studied. But even the most prestigious place 100 years ago is not going to yield the answers we'd hope to have today.
Right.
They wouldn't have had access to what we know, even what I know as not a neurosurgeon or anybody yeah. involved in neuroscience, let alone trained professionals who are. And we're not going to pretend to know that, but I think it's possible that this sudden change of behavior could have been related to that, like a switch being flipped. It could have just been caused by something neurological. Now, the third theory is that he didn't kill them at all. Someone else did, and he was set up, and he was distraught from finding his family slain, that he took his own life.
Okay.
I don't know that really many people believe that. I think everyone's pretty convinced based on the scene.
Yeah. I'd also be hard-pressed to find a man who walks into his entire family annihilated and then writes no one to blame on himself before taking his own life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Trouble can cause.
You know what? Trouble can cause a lot of things.
And the turntables.
Exactly.
It just has the, you know, so I don't know. Really, it's those two theories. But again, that's what we have, theories. We'll never know. And there's no way to undoubtedly prove what did happen that day, the exact order of events, why he did what he did.
Right.
As for afterwards, poor Arthur was orphaned.
Yeah.
16 or 19, he's still a young man, forced to grow up way too young. And back in those days, of course, kids kind of seemed to grow up a lot faster because they were forced to. The emphasis was you get out, you work, you do that.
He sure had to, yeah.
But he woke up that morning in a family of nine.
Yeah.
And he went to bed that night the lone survivor.
Yeah.
Charlie's brother, so Arthur's uncle, must have acquired the home in some way, because he ended up reopening the home.
Okay.
And he charged an entrance fee of 25 cents for those with a flair for morbid tourism.
Oh.
The nosy townspeople, those truly interested, and who would have been true crime podcast girlies if they'd had the chance, lined up to look in the house.
Yeah.
So you could go in, you could walk around, you could see everything. In fact, the house was left as untouched as it could be, I guess would be the word. I'm pretty sure the bloodstains were still on the floorboards.
Holy moly.
But there's this emphasis that the cake that Marie baked was left on the table.
Oh my gosh.
And it just sat there for people to walk around. And people ended up stealing raisins from the cake as like a souvenir.
Yo, what?
That they ended up having to put the cake in, like, behind glass.
Yeah.
To just leave it there. But that happened. I don't know how I feel about that.
That's a lot to process.
Charlie's brother, the brother that did this, his name was Marion, and he was profiting off of the horrific crime perpetrated by his brother.
Yeah.
And if it sounds like that's wrong, it's because it is.
Yeah, it does feel that way,
I think.
Yeah.
I don't know how I feel, because there's an argument there that the proceeds were going to Arthur to be able to afford the house.
Okay.
And to be able to keep it going
and existing, yeah.
Or at least be able to profit something before he had to sell it or whatever. I don't know what it is. But then there's actually no confirmation that that money ever went to Arthur.
Okay.
So it could have.
Yeah.
But to certainly. Me, it sounds like somebody who tried to make a profit off of a bad situation. It gives me the energy of Nikki being like, how much money could I make off a book deal?
Yeah.
It just has that, like, well, this shit happened and I didn't do it. However, how could I make a buck?
I'm close enough. I might be able to spin this in my favor. Yeah.
I just might profit. And I don't know that Arthur got a cent of that. I would hope he got all of it.
Yeah.
I don't know that he would ever want to live in that house again. And if it's being shown, I don't know that you would be living in it.
Yeah.
We just don't know.
Poor Arthur.
I know. That poor kid. I really couldn't find anything else about him.
Wow.
I believe I saw a source, and I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure one source said that Arthur had died in his 30s or 40s in a car accident.
Oh, my word.
I remember thinking he survived all of that.
Yeah.
And then that. So I'm not exactly sure.
Yeah.
But regardless, it does not appear that Arthur lived a very long life either. This family case, these murders, have been a mysterious tragedy that locals today even ponder. The funeral home that ultimately received the bodies, not the first one, but the second one that did the embalming and in the autopsies.
Yeah.
They actually were turned into a museum dedicated to the family.
Oh, wow.
In pop culture, the murder ballad, The Murder of the Lawson Family, was, you guessed it, written about the murders of the Lawson family.
Yeah.
It was originally recorded in 1930 by the Carolina Buddies, and it was covered again by the Stanley Brothers in 1956.
Wow.
There are some episodes about this case you'll find, but this is one of those cases that, like I said, if we covered this in like August.
Yeah.
There's this time of year, there's that bitter cold. There's so much about this that I think you feel it more.
Yeah.
Talking about it in a timely sense. And I don't think it's fair to them to just throw it on any other time.
Yeah.
These poor kids, I mean, if Marie really was being abused, it just seems like her life was a lot of pain and then it was taken from her.
Right.
And if that were the reason for the murders, it's odd to me that that their dad would kill everybody.
Right. And this is a twisted thought, so I will acknowledge, I think especially on that note, it doesn't make a lot of sense to me that he would kill everybody and himself if the point
is... That's what I'm thinking.
...to get rid of people who may have known or to sort of protect his reputation, then there's some sort of thinking in his mind of longevity, right? Long enough that someone will find out and it will impact him. Mm-hmm. Long enough that he might be able to have a life after this.
Mm-hmm.
So both of those combined doesn't make sense. And even still, if it was to cover that up, then why not wait for Arthur? Or why send him out if he did?
Why kill a 12-year-old, 7-year-old, 4-year-old, 2-year-old, and 4-month-old?
Right.
Who had absolutely nothing to do with any of this.
Right.
And I'm not saying that's a reason to kill anybody else, but that's 5 people that were entirely unrelated to, if that's the motive, the whole thing there.
Right.
Now, maybe Marie wasn't the only kid being abused, if
possible.
She was at all.
And I also think it's interesting. I don't know. I think about Arthur after all of this. You live through a Christmas morning, which, whether or not you have all the money in the world or none of it, is always a special time with families when you celebrate, like whatever your holiday of choice is, if you will, mm-hmm. like that is always a warming time. That's heartwarming in the middle of the bitter cold. And especially for a place that didn't always get that, like you're waking up and this Christmas probably feels a little different in a nice way where you're like, oh, we're all here. We're actually kind of cozy and warm. Like we love this. And then to go to bed that night, the only one still standing, and everything has sort of changed immediately. But then also to, like, I'm sorry to be Debbie Downer, but like then he probably gets as close to back on his feet as he can, and the Great Depression hits.
Mm-hmm. And he's an orphan and he's young, and whether his uncle was really trying to help him or not, the house is now a display for people to like
walk through.
And I understand the appeal of, they're probably, again, the true crime girlies that didn't get a chance to listen to true crime.
Yeah.
Of just that, how can this happen? If I can see it, maybe I can understand it. Is there a hint? Is there anything? Or maybe it's just curiosity. It could be any number of things. But to then just kind of see people like line up to go inside your house to see where the worst thing they've ever heard of happened has got to be weird, because it does not allow you to move on from it.
No.
In any meaningful way, if I don't know how you do, but I mean in any kind of way, be able to try to wash your hands of some of it to live some kind of normal life. Whether or not he made a scent off of it, it must pale in comparison.
Right.
Then he has his 20s in the Great Depression.
Yeah.
And then he's dead by 1945.
Yeah.
He's dead, according to some of my sources, he was 35 years old and dead in 1945. So he's dead as the war ends.
Like, yeah.
Great. That really?
Oh.
It's just, I can't imagine what it was. Like, when his family's killed,
yeah,
he's halfway through his life. He does not know that.
Right. And it's, I don't know, it just feels devastating to me that he had to endure and suffer through living through all of that.
Mm-hmm.
And then also the rest of his life was enduring, you know? Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I think out of all of the theories, it does make sense to me that maybe it's more brain injury related. I don't think it's impossible for there to be some overlap of the two.
Mm-hmm.
Like maybe Marie said something and he freaked out thinking that everybody figured that out and then he snapped. Like, I don't know.
Or it's secret option 3, which is none of those things and we actually have no idea.
Right. I do put a little bit of weight in a family member coming forward and saying, yeah, that was some family gossip I heard.
But then you have to question the source.
Right.
So we're relying on her memory from how long ago, how old was she?
Right.
How reliable was that information? And then how reliable is she in terms of, and it's awful to say, but we've seen it, where people are like, if I can profit from this.
Right. How earnest is she in just trying to give information versus enter herself into the picture?
Right. Yeah. And that's not to like cast any of that on somebody, but not knowing her, not vetting her, not that I'm doing that anyway, but you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
There's a question of who benefits, I guess, is something that you should always consider in most things. And I, you know, like, you want to believe her because this is her family, and who better to speak on it than her? I mean, yeah. Who else's word would you take? But there's that other piece where who better to lie about it?
Right.
Or who better to embellish or make something up? And why now? So there's a lot of questions where,
yeah, you don't know what you don't know.
You just don't know. And then there's the other, I think, protective part that all of us feel, which is, well, I don't want to believe it because it's horrible.
Right.
Because if that's the truth, how horrific is that truth?
Yeah. And it's all very wild to me. Like, I know we don't know the exact order of events. No one was there to document it, you know, but it's fascinating to me, sort of the way that all of this happened back to back. On Christmas, you go from probably like a dopamine dump of a morning to everybody slaughtered in the afternoon.
Yeah, potentially. Even if it were just a normal morning, as right. all were, to go from that, which I'm sure the house is busy. There's kids running around. Yeah. I don't know what kind of handle they have on them. Marie's baking.
There's a lot of them.
Marie's baking a cake. It has raisins in it. Not my favorite, but that's an aside.
Yeah. You can have my piece and I'll say it looks great.
Yeah, it's set on the table. It's ready to go. The younger girls are heading off to go visit family. Maybe they're going to get them, or maybe there's gifts or right. whatever it is. They're 12 and 7 years old. They're probably walking hand in hand. Yeah. Maybe the 12-year-old tries to trip the 7-year-old. You know what I mean? I don't know. Yeah. The 7-year-old cries and says she'll tell mom. I don't know. But there's just something. And as they're heading away, as they come into view, their dad guns them down. In what world does that make sense?
At all.
You can't rationalize that because it isn't rational, because it's horrible.
Right.
But it happened. Then I assume, and I am making an assumption, that Fanny hears that and steps outside.
Yeah. Especially if she's on the porch. I can't imagine she'd see it and remain on the porch.
Right.
Especially if he goes up to then assault them afterwards with the gun.
Mm-hmm.
That I think as a mother, I'd be shocked if you were able to sort of override that instinct to immediately run and protect.
She might have also heard the shot, and maybe she wouldn't have thought much of it, again, because of this right. tradition that we keep harping on, but she might have considered, that sounds awfully close, and I know that my girls were just heading out that way. So right. she might have just stepped out just to make sure. And instead, she sees her husband aiming a gun at her. And then her body is found inside.
Right.
So after he's killed everybody and he's repositioning them, he did move her into the house.
Right.
I mean, the story is that Fanny had stepped outside. I believe it's her because every source is telling me it's her. But if her body was moved, could that have been someone else that was moved and they just didn't know? It's not like they were testing blood and confirming that it was her.
Right. Possible.
I'm assuming there were drag marks that led to her body. So, again,
ideally that would make a lot of sense. Yeah.
That, as awful as it is to like visualize it, that's how I'm picturing that go.
Right.
But we're going off of so much. I mean, there are some very old grainy photos of the floor.
Okay.
So you can see where each body laid, because you could see the blood spots of that.
Okay.
There's a photo of the cabin, which is very small.
Yeah.
And there's that infamous family photo where you can see all of the kids.
Yeah.
And they look like a normal family of that time.
Mm.
Not one of them, short of the dad.
Right.
Knew this would be the last time they'd all have a photo together.
Right. If he did it all at that time.
Did he know? Was that planned? Does that show forethought? Or was this something they finally maybe have the money where they can do it?
Yeah. And I got to be honest. Again, it's horrible to think this way. I think my sort of true crime brain has been conditioned to sort through anything for like a potential motive or gain for someone who does something like this.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't foresee someone spending all of that money to clothe 9 of them, right? Mm-hmm. 9 total.
Yeah, 9 total of them, yeah, the family of 9.
And then on top of that, to spend all of the money to have this photograph taken and developed. I mean, I know at this time it was a lot of dark rooms, so I don't even know if that would have been fully complete at the time. Like, I don't know if they would have had it back yet or not.
Mm-hmm.
And so to do all of that knowing seems like, if I'm a calloused person who knows I'm going to murder my family, why am I spending money on Christmas, new clothes, a photograph, and especially a photograph that I might have to go pick up afterwards?
Wouldn't the same be true, though, that if you're planning on killing your whole family, what does the money matter? Even if you couldn't afford it, what are you going to do? You know what I mean?
Like, if you're killing yourself and you know that as well,
yeah,
whatever.
What's to lose? Like,
Well,
right. But if you don't have the money to spend and you're spending it anyway, but you're going to be dead in 3 days, does that carry the weight as if you weren't? Probably right. not. So even could or couldn't, to me, it almost kind of points to some kind of premeditation in that way.
Yeah, I think it does
But you can, I mean, you can make other arguments too. There's so much. I can't say it enough. We don't know. We just don't know. But to me, this case was so jarring, and I've wanted to cover this.
Yeah.
I'm sorry that the timing of that had to be on the heels of Chris Watts.
Yeah.
But I wanted their story told in the best way that I could do it, and I felt like this was the best way to do it.
No, agreed. It's not fair to anybody in these cases, these very real personal moments of hell for a lot of people, to just throw it out there for the sake of throwing it out there. I mean, we want to bring witness, I guess, to it. We want to tell these stories. We want to be able to sit with that, to think about and sort of feel for people who had to go through this. But if you're really trying to do that to the best of your ability, I don't think you can just throw it out in May and be like, well, here you go.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that was right. I do. I promise you guys, like, Girl Scout honor kind of promise. And yeah, I said that. I will not give you a filicide next week.
Yeah, we're going to. Yeah.
We'll take a break.
We're going to move away from these. I'm sorry that we moved into them.
Yeah.
I know these cases aren't easy to talk about, but we're very proud of you.
Yeah.
For sticking around with us and getting through it. And we hope you like what you heard today.
Yeah, to the best that you can.
And the best that you can. We hope that... Did we keep you company on your little drive to a family member's house? So sorry.
Uh-huh. Did you drive safe?
Are you... Did you play this so that your family can hear your favorite true crime podcast? That is so damn cute.
That is adorable.
Did you tell them about our link tree and that they can follow us and do that? Did you tell them to rate us 5 stars too? That's awfully sweet of you.
That's
thank you.
So sweet. Did you actually also ask them to pitch in on what they thought happened and
did
their
you
theory?
Ask if they had any pictures of their pod pets in their Christmas sweaters, because we want to see that too.
Yes. Do you have any photos of you, or does your family have any photos of their pod pet under the tree, like the gift they are this year?
Like the absolute present they are. Do you have any pictures of your cats swatting at the ornaments like mine did, or is it just me? Because Oliver's being an ass.
Yeah, that tracks. If it helps, Newton is also being an ass.
Does if it but helps, when Newton's isn't always he? An ass.
Yeah. He does love a Christmas tree. He just also really loves trying to knock it down.
I do know that about him. Yeah, we've known that. But anyway, we love you guys. We hope you guys have a very Merry Christmas if you celebrate. We hope that you get some awesome quality time with the people that you love. Tell the people you love that you love them.
Yeah.
Even if you told them yesterday, tell them again today, you little silly goose.
Yeah, and when you see them, maybe you should give them like a hug or something. I don't want to be scandalous, but
maybe, I don't know. So anyway, we love you. We hope you have a very lovely time. We're going to see you next week.
We sure are.
If you want to see the people, places, and things that we talk about, I know you do, you should check out our Instagram, which is going to be linked below in the link tree. You can see the photos of the people, the cases. We also post a lot in our highlights. We have resources in those highlights for mental health and substance use. We have a ton of different ones that you should definitely check out. We have ones on associations or things in memory of victims that their families have made, foundations, donations, drives, things like that. We have pod pets. We have reprieves.
So many pod pets.
If you need a reprieve, which is just what we call anything that might make you smile or laugh, we put it there for you to click through, because what we talk about is not easy. But no. I know that I'm going to lose my voice if I keep talking. So without further ado.
If I do look at my clock, that was
about time for true crime.
Bye.
Bye guys. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.